Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're welcoming back a guest that we had on some time ago, Keith Grossman. Keith has been a leader in the medical technology industry for more than 35 years, and he is currently the chairman of the board at Nevro Corporation, where he served previously as president and CEO from 2019 through April of 2023. Prior to Nevro, he was the president and CEO of Thoratec Corporation, and he has sat on a number of boards. He is a great leader. He has some great insights to share around leading organizations through substantial growth, and we're looking forward to our conversation today with Keith. It's great to have Keith joining us for a return visit. You're one of just a couple people we've had come back on, so you must have done a great job the first time.
Well, I hope that's the case. Maybe you're bringing me back on to fix the mistakes from the first time, Mark. I'm not sure, but that's good to be with you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for those that are new to our podcast, can you give us just an abbreviated, I know you've given your background before, but a lot of new listeners, could you give a little summary?
Sure, I'm happy to. It's a 40-year career, so I'll try to condense that into 30 seconds or so. I've been in the medical device and supplies space my whole career, starting with American Hospital Supply and coming up through a number of sales and marketing positions. Started the first part of my CEO experience running Thoratec, a cardiovascular implantable device company, starting in the mid-90s. I did that for about 10 years. Stepped away from Thoratec. We took the company public and grew it quite a lot. I stayed on the board. I did some work in private equity. Took on another CEO job at a women's health device company called Conceptus, which we sold to Bayer Healthcare. Was asked to actually come back into Thoratec a second time to run it, stepping in from the board at that point, which I did. And we ended up selling the company to St. Jude. It's now a key part of the Abbott heart failure business. And I was then in what I thought was possibly retirement, and was asked to come in and run Nevro in the pain space, the neuromodulation space in 2019, which I did for about 4 years. I stepped down from that role in 23 and handed that role off to a very capable successor. I'm still on the board as chairman at Nevro. I'm on the Outset Medical Board, and I'm the vice chairman of the Alcon Board. And so I'm, let's say, semi-retired.
Yeah, well, you've had a great career. You know, have you thought maybe that somebody's going to come and tap you on the shoulder again? Or I'm sure that it might be a possibility, right?
Well, they can tap. But,
whether you say yes.
Yeah, I think at this point I've found the balance that I intended to find.
Ah, got it. So is our listeners, most of them are first-time leaders, first-time CEOs. Decision-making is always something that the CEO needs to be good at. But what are some of the most important decisions that you've made as you've led organizations, and maybe think back to kind of that first leadership position and then what you've learned as you've progressed in your career?
Yeah. Well, I think, look, growing up as a CEO in the medical device space, it is an industry that for lots of reasons rewards scale. So what that means is you're either a little bit larger company and you're probably a buyer of technologies and companies, or you're not, and you're likely to be a target for acquisition. So that's just the nature of our, the structural reality of our industry. So I think probably the most important decisions that I've made along the way are when the companies I've been running are either one of those, either an acquirer or more commonly a logical company to be acquired, because that's a very, very significant milestone in the life of a company. It's a both an end and a beginning. And that's, I think, clearly the most important decision you end up making for companies in this industry. I think more from a leadership perspective, which is probably what you're asking. As you come into a company as a leader, I think it's how you staff that organization, how you organize the company, and then how you allocate capital among different priorities within the company kind of inform the foundation of what you'll do over the course of your leadership, which is really to formulate the mission, which is the why, kind of the strategy, what you're going to do with that mission, how you're going to make it come to life, which is the what, and then the values and the culture and the ways of working that you want to bake into the organization, which is the how. And I think they're all based on the foundation of the people that you bring in, how you staff that organization, and that's where it all really starts, how you organize the company around the strategy and the mission, and then how you fund it. You know, do you put your money where your mouth is? And when all those things are aligned, then you're off to a good start. But those are, as you come into an organization, almost all the key decisions you're making fall under those categories, I think.
So as a company, and you've scaled organizations, seen growth as far as within them. And I think sometimes the smaller organization has a lot of inspiration, you know, just that everybody's in it together. And then as it grows larger, sometimes it's easy to lose some of that inspiration. How did you maintain that as far as a culture, just to encourage that new ideas and getting people to continue to stay invested as far as in the organization?
Boy, you're right. I mean, that absolutely is the challenge of scaling. And it's kind of linear. I think the larger you get, the more difficult it gets to maintain that mission-driven engagement that you enjoy as a small company. And it's a challenge because as a leadership team, you always feel that drive, that mission, because it's your job. It's why you're there. But as you get larger and more of your team is further away from the leadership team on a daily basis, it gets to be more challenging, and you get more of the team tending to think of their role there as a job and not as part of a mission. And you're constantly, I think, fighting that, because the more engaged your team is, the entirety of your team, you know, the more effective you're going to be and the more productive your organization is going to be. Having said that, it's hard to do, and it's not one thing. It's 1,000 tactical details that you focus on every day. It's how you hire. It's who you hire. It's how you communicate and how frequently you communicate about what you're doing and the importance of what everybody's role is to what you're doing. And I think it's important to remember, in our industry, we have this great luxury of having this mission that's focused on patient care. Now, all different forms of patient care, but patient care nonetheless. And I think leadership has to constantly put that back in front of the team and tie that to the mission and their engagement and what they're doing every single day. But it is tying everything together to maintain that culture. Culture is pretty easy when it's 50 people. It really is. It's a great luxury of being smaller. And by the way, there's some tough parts of being that small as well. But one of the great luxuries is you can get everybody in a room together. And if you can't form a really compelling and cohesive culture at that size, you've got a problem, especially in our industry. But I think the bigger you get and the more distributed your team gets, you've really got to work hard on all those fundamentals and then how you communicate the fundamentals of what you're trying to do. And it's got to be really intentional, because it's it gets harder.
So you talked about one of the key responsibilities is getting the right team in place and hiring the right people. Talk about kind of, you had, as you think back to the decisions that you've made around people, how did you make decisions if you had two candidates that were basically equal as far as background and experience? What were some of the criteria that you've used over the years that you think has helped you make better decisions around that?
Well, I'm smiling because I don't know that I've ever acted. It's a great hypothetical. I'm not sure I've ever actually seen that, where two people are never equal. And I think if they both seem qualified, you know, the proper thing to do is put is put those people in the right context. And what is that context? Who are they going to work for? Who will work for them on a daily basis? And in that context, what kind of gaps are you trying to fill? And how do each of those candidates fill those gaps? What kind of headroom do you need? Do you need somebody who's capable of doing two or three jobs after that? Or do you just need a heads down subject matter expert who's just going to knock the cover off the ball doing something very specific for the organization? I think once you put people in that context, once you know what you really need as an organization, and that is the key, two candidates are never equal. You're really not hiring just a resume. You're hiring somebody to come in and help you communicate the priorities, the culture, the behaviors, all the things that you're trying to inculcate into your organization. And once you put candidates, I think, through that filter, there's always one. In my experience, there's always one that rises to the top who will really help you kind of shape the organization that you're trying to shape and not run counter to what you're trying to do.
So as you hired people as far as in the past, and you figure out this isn't the right fit for them or the culture, those hard decisions to say, you know, this isn't good for you, it's not good for us. Talk about that, because those are some of the most challenging. Again, a young leader sometimes is afraid to make that decision, but it's talk about a little bit of your philosophy around that.
Well, I think some of it is timing. I think when a leader comes into a new company or a new division or whatever the role is, I think it's important to kind of formulate those positions early. I don't mean snap judgments. I don't mean, you know, after meeting somebody one time, but I think the clock is ticking on those decisions. I don't think that you have 2 or 3 years to put your team together. In fact, I think whatever team you have at the 6 month or 12 month point, people are going to assume that's your team, that you've put your imprimatur on the team and its members at that point, and they are yours. And I think it gets harder to really do what you want to do with the organization if that team does not reflect who you want. So I think timing is really important. You've got to be decisive. You've got to know exactly where you want to take the organization. So it starts with what kind of culture you want, what kind of strategy are you pursuing, what things are going to drive. In my case, I've run public companies. So what are those things that are really going to drive shareholder value? And what kind of plan do you need to get there? And therefore, what kind of team do you want? How do you want to organize them? And what kind of culture do you want to build? And once you've come to those decisions, you'll look at your team through that lens and you'll know very quickly who you've got to keep, who is a star in that context that you need to hang on to, and who's not a fit. And I think you've got to come to those decisions pretty quickly and implement them. And I think, by the way, people are expecting a new leader to do that. And some cases are hoping for it. Some cases, maybe they're not looking forward to it. But in any case, I think they're expecting it, and for good reason. So I think timing is key.
You've seen a lot of new leaders. I'm sure that you've hired in the past or you've promoted to positions. What are some things that people make as far as mistakes around their focus and their time that they spend on a weekly basis? Is there some tips that you give as far as the amount of time they need to be spending on particular areas of focus? Any thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think maybe a couple of things come to mind. One is they skip the step that I just described. I think new leaders tend to come in and they immediately want to start doing. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have the team they really need, ultimately they'll fail in certain areas. Then they'll circle back later and try to fix the team issues then. I think you've got to start at the beginning, and the beginning is the people. And so I think new leader needs to kind of pause for a second as they come in, again, in the context of what they think they really need to do to be successful, look at their team and make sure they've got it right, then start executing. So that would be the first thing. I think the other thing, the other area where I've seen leaders, whether they're new or experienced, trip up is maybe making the leadership role about themselves. it's surprisingly common about hitting their number, about doing what they need to do to be successful in their role. When in fact, I think the best leaders that I've seen and been around are really there to make their team successful. And I know that sounds like a cliche, but it really is the only way to lead effectively through a team. And I think leaders that are, albeit maybe very capable, talented, but the leadership role tends to be more about them and not about trying to allow their team to be successful. I think they are typically less successful, if not immediately, certainly over time.
Besides that trait, as far as somebody thinking it's more about themselves versus the team and the success of the, you know, I've heard it said that when you're a leader, it's about we versus me. And, you know, I think that whole shift from an individual contributor to a leader is sometimes a challenging thing for people to start thinking that way. But is there any other behavior trait that you see that tends to derail leaders? As you've seen people over the years that maybe had a lot of potential, but there's something that derailed them in their career.
There's a lot of them. I mean, there's a lot of things that can derail leaders, and I think that maybe this is less of a trait than an outcome, but I think a loss of trust is the beginning of the end. And usually when you see leaders beginning to fail, they've lost the trust of those that they're supposed to be leading. And that it could be a trust in their competence, their ability to actually do the job and get things done. Or it could be something a little bit deeper than that. I think when a team loses trust in the leader and that whether or not that leader is concerned with their success, whether or not they can trust the things that the leader says or does, it's impossible to lead. And I think that is a fatal flaw. That is a fatal outcome for a leader. When you lose the trust of your organization and the people you're supposed to be leading, you could be the most talented executive, the most knowledgeable person about your business. And it's just not going to work. You're not going to get done what you need to get done. And so I think leaders that try to do something that's not genuine, I mentioned a moment ago that leaders need to lead through their team and it needs to not be about them. I've seen leaders pretend to be that leader, and people are smart, right? They sniff out the reality of a leader very, very quickly. And I think when leaders are not genuine and they're trying to pretend that they're a servant leader and they're not, whatever the case is, when they lose the trust of the team, I think they're done. And it's usually pretty evident. It's very hard to get it back as well. So I would say that is, that's the one thing I've seen that is the most undermining to leaders. People will support their leadership. They will work with them if they think they can trust them and they're generally headed in the right direction and they're trying to do the right things. I think no matter how capable and talented they are, if they've lost the trust of their team, they're not going to be able to lead them.
Who are some of the early influences that you think helped shape you as a leader?
You know, I've been asked this question a lot over the years, and I've been kind of forced to think about it. And what I realized after being asked this question a few times by people is that I didn't pursue one or two or three really significant career-long mentor-mentee relationships for whatever reason. Maybe I didn't know any better. But I think I certainly had leaders. I had senior colleagues. I had board members once I started my CEO experience that I really admired. And I really admired not only what they'd accomplished, but the way they did it, the way they managed themselves, the way they processed information and data, the way they made decisions, the way they handled difficult decisions, even crises, the way they challenged others without being difficult, and the way they won and got things done. And so you recognize those things. And I think I got in the habit early in my career of trying to be, and it is a habit, by the way, I think that you can form, trying to be a student of leaders around you. By the way, both good and bad. Sure. But being very thoughtful about kind of studying those that you admire and those you don't, and trying to figure out why, what it is they do, and are there things that they do that you can incorporate in a genuine fashion into your own leadership style? And that kind of becomes a habit. And while they may not be a mentor, they're an important example, somebody who's playing a key role over the course of your career, and you can learn an awful lot, but you've got to try. I think it's got to be a kind of an active effort on your part, because there, you know, over the course of a career, you're going to be exposed to a lot of leaders, good and bad. There's a lot of content there, and there's a lot to learn from if you try. And I think that's kind of the approach I took, as opposed to, you know, having somebody that I called on for 25 years or that kind of thing.
So what are you looking forward to most in this next chapter of your life?
You know, professionally, I think it goes by quickly. And yet I look back and there's a lot of really rich experience. And there's still lots of room for improvement and lots of ways to get better, which I hope I try to do every day. But I'm at a point in my career where I think I can be helpful to others who are trying to do what I did. So it's not a time in my career where I'm continuing to try and do those things, but maybe help others who are still trying to do those things. And it's actually really rewarding. And look, board work is one way of doing that, but it's a really meaningful way of doing that. And so I'm enjoying kind of being a sounding board for leadership teams now who are trying to grapple with some of the issues that I grappled with. And if there are ways that I can help, provide that voice. And so that's professionally, I think, where most of my focus is right now.
That's great. Well, I've definitely enjoyed our conversations and wish you the best, as I know you're not fully retired, because you've got a lot of responsibility with the boards you're sitting on. But definitely wish you continued success in all you're doing. And like I told you earlier, I was talking to one of your board members, and they said you're one of those leaders that people love to follow. So appreciate your insights.
Well, thank you, Mark. And it was good to see you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.